It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night here. It is Tuesday. It's 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. We're always on the 101.3 ESPN app, which you can download for free in the Google Play Store or the Apple Store. We're also on the Amazon Echo, so if you have that Echo device, just say enable 101.3 ESPN. And then after that, all you have to say is open 101.3 ESPN. We're getting a lot of feedback on people listening to us that way, and as less and less people have actual radios in their home, you have that Amazon Echo device, well, you get us streaming on that, so we appreciate however you are consuming the Huddle and Champlain Valley Game Night and all of our programming here at 101.3 ESPN. We go up until 6:25, and then we bring you Red Sox baseball. Rick Porcello on the mound. Mookie Betts out of the lineup for the Red Sox as they take on the Blue Jays. They won yesterday, looking to win again today. 8-3 winners yesterday afternoon. Sox with an afternoon game tomorrow, so we'll get on late to the Huddle. Should be no impact on Champlain Valley Game Night, provided it's not 18 innings or something like that. Burger Bar tonight in Colchester. It is trivia night, 7:30 to 9:30. They've got food specials. They've got drink specials, half-price appetizers, tons of beer on special. They've got Long Trail Blackberry Wheat at a great price. They've got Coors Light, Miller Lite, Blue Moon, all within $2.50, $3. So perfect spot to come out. It's a beautiful night. Come out and spend it with us. And I got to give a shout out to Steve from our sales department, because I am a big memorabilia guy. I am a big time, I'm a collector, but I'm not going to say I'll go out of my way to, I'm not chasing down certain cards. I'm not chasing down certain pieces, things like that. But once I get something, I pride myself on having, a great collection of things, bobbleheads, hats. It doesn't matter what it is. I just like having stuff. And at some point, I'm going to have to get rid of some stuff, and I'm already dreading that day whenever that comes. But I have five Ken Griffey Jr. action figures, the old starting lineup action figures. I don't know how many people remember those, how many people have a collection of them, how many people are looking to get a collection of them. But the old starting lineup action figures, I got five of them, and I've got them pinned to the back wall of my office. So, I had a nice pyramid shape, and I was missing a sixth one. So Steve, our sales guy, he's also a big collector and a much more avid collector than I am. He pulled out a Griffey that he had. He brought it in today. So now I have the sixth Griffey starting lineup to add to my collection. He also gave me another piece of Griffey memorabilia, so he knows I'm a big Griffey collector. So, and we had a listener for a while, and I won't say his name just for privacy's sake, but we had a listener come up to us at one of our remotes recently, about a month ago or so, a month and a half ago, and he's a huge starting lineup collector, probably the biggest one in the area. He also brought us a bunch of stuff. He brought me a Griffey. He bought Rich a Nomar Garciaparra, which we keep in our studio. So being a Red Sox fan, me being a Mariner fan. So it's a blast collecting that stuff and seeing some of that stuff resurface, because people thought that starting lineups were going to be kind of the it thing. They were up there with Beanie Babies. It's like you thought they were going to be the next big collectible, and some of them are extremely valuable, and others of them are nothing, but people are starting to bring them out of the woodwork. We've got some sports memorabilia places in the area. There's one in Winooski. There's one in Essex. I've been to both of them, and they both have a couple of starting lineups that I've gone in there and bought. So definitely fun to get that Griffey. So shout out to Steve from the sales department. As for what's coming up today, some thoughts on Kyrie Irving's future and how it impacts the Celtics in more ways than the obvious. Some notes on Cassius Marsh's comments about his time in New England, and it wasn't a good one. But first, it's unfortunate that the Celtics proved my point on Sunday in Game 7. The three-point line has become the key to basketball. Offensively, can you shoot it? Defensively, can you stop it? The Celtics went 7 of 39 from three. They did a lot of things better than the Cavaliers. They had more rebounds. They had less turnovers. They had more players, a better diversity in their scoring. They did a lot of things you look at and say, we won this on the stat sheet. We should have won Game 7. We should be playing the Eastern Conference Finals. There's two things the Celtics didn't do well. One, they don't have LeBron James, 35-9-9, or 35-15-9, rather. And two, they did not have the ability to control the three-point line. They allowed 9 threes. That's not a huge number. But they got outshot from three in terms of total makes, and they got outshot in percentage. Now, Cleveland was horrible. It was 9 of 35. But Boston was 7 of 39. So there was a disparity in three-point effectiveness on both ends there, not favoring Boston. They made less, and they shot more. And if you can control the three-point line, you can win. And that's frustrating for me as a fan to have to admit that, because I used to look at basketball box scores, and I would go right to what a guy I used to work with, Zach Bai, who's now a radio host out in Denver, but he used to work with me, and we used to talk games, and we used to do recaps of games, and we went right to the toughness stats. It was turnovers, points in the paint, free throws attempted. Those were the three things that we looked at, the toughness stats. And generally, if a team was able to win all three of those toughness stats, they won the game. That's not the case anymore. It's all about now at the NBA level. It may be a little bit different at college, and especially at lower level college. When we talk about UVM America East games, it's not so much about the three-point line because you just don't have the quality of shooter that you have in the NBA. But the NBA game now, the toughness stats, they don't matter as much. The three-point line is absolutely what matters. I mean, look yesterday at Golden State and Houston. Houston misses 27 threes in a row at one point. They were atrocious and embarrassing. Golden State catches fire in the third quarter, especially Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, and the game's over. Houston can't hit the three, and they can't defend it. Live by the three, die by the three. Houston did yesterday. They died by the three yesterday. The three-point line is now, I mean, Ryan Rucco of ESPN, broadcaster for the NBA, did a ton of NBA games this year. He said that the three-point line, how you defend it, is arguably the biggest thing you can do on defense in today's NBA. If you can defend the three, you can win a lot of games. And Boston, while they defended it well, you look at the percentage Cleveland shot, it's not very good at 9 for 35. You look at it and say, they shot a better percentage and they made more total. And that's the difference in the game. LeBron James is a freak. What he did was unbelievable. You go through and you start to really look at the statistics that LeBron put out. I mean, just listen to these numbers. LeBron had 24 field goal attempts. They averaged 16.5 feet away from the basket, and 18 of them were contested. He's shooting from deep, and he's shooting 3 out of every 4 shots with a hand in his face. And he still is able to put up 35 points. He created 13 uncontested field goals for his teammates because of the attention that he draws and the vision that he has. He is not human. He's in his mid-30s. This is unbelievable. Okay, the Celtics messed up 2 things in Game 7. One is they didn't have LeBron James. That they couldn't control. 2 is that they didn't win the three-point battle. Made fewer, shot more, and that's it. And it's unfortunate that that's the reality, because when you only commit 5 turnovers in a basketball game, the other team commits 12, you're supposed to be on your way to a victory. When you out-rebound your opponent, even if it's by 1, you're supposed to be on your way to a victory. The Cavaliers shot, I think, 6 more free throws. I would have liked to see the Celtics shoot. I think Celtics were like 14 of 19. I would have liked to have seen them shoot more and shoot better, but that disparity wasn't so large that that cost you the game. What cost you the game was 1, LeBron James, and 2, the three-point battle that you just couldn't capitalize on. If the Celtics hit 13 threes, they win the game. They hit 7. If Cleveland hits 4 threes, then Boston wins the game. Cleveland hit 9, and that's the difference. And that's new basketball. And I said this at the end of last week. The more I think I know about basketball at the NBA, the more I'm starting to realize that the three-point line is now arguably the first place you go on the stat sheet and you say, okay, who won the three-point line, and did they win it by a lot? Because if they did, then you're staring in the face of a victory more often than not. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. If you want to get in, you can, 802-655-6672. We'll get you those Red Sox lineups momentarily. I mean, and one more note on the Celtics. They missed 32 threes in Game 7. That's a franchise playoff record for most missed threes in a game. They were 2 of 16 on uncontested threes. They even got some looks and couldn't make anything. They were 1 for 14 on threes where they tried to create their own shot. So we had talked a lot about ball movement and how ball movement was the key to this thing and how you created open shots through ball movement. Well, they took 14 threes off their own ISO, off hero ball, and they made one. And they were 2 of 11 on three-point attempts in transition. They didn't shoot well in any facet of it. And that is largely where the undoing happened. All right, let's get real quick into Kyrie Irving, because Kyrie Irving's situation drastically affects the future of the Celtics. And I understand that the easy answer is, well, of course it does. He's got to come back and he's got to be healthy. And if he's healthy, then they can win the NBA Finals. Or people will take the other side and say, well, yeah, they're going to have to pay him a max deal. And then what does that mean for X, X, and Y? Those are both true. But when you start to think about roster construction for next year, you have to factor in your doubts about Kyrie Irving into how you build your roster. People will say, a lot of people have already said, that trading Terry Rozier is inevitable. There's not room for everybody. Not enough balls to go around. And people have said that. But I don't think you can trade Terry Rozier. Maybe you'd like to. He's young. He's still got an affordable, controllable contract. He's desirable to another team. His value may never be higher. He may never do what he did in these playoffs. His value may never be higher. And you like to think that with Kyrie Irving there, you've got the best point guard in the league, or a top two point guard in the league, and that you don't need a reserve guard a ton, and you could probably recoup more by letting him go or by trading him. But I don't think you can make that assumption. Number one, I don't know that Kyrie Irving's going to come back healthy from this injury. And number two, I don't know that I trust Kyrie Irving to stay healthy consistently. Kyrie Irving has missed a lot of time in his career. We talked about it last summer. People were calling Isaiah Thomas' injury situation worrisome, and it ended up being that way. But by the time they were, you know, by the time they had been 26 years old or whatever Kyrie was, 25 at the time, he had missed more games by 25 than Isaiah Thomas had in his entire career. Kyrie Irving has been injured a lot in his career. He's great. He's better than Terry Rozier, no doubt. But I don't know that I can just let Rozier go. I don't know that I can just trade him when I'm not sure that I'm going to have Kyrie Irving not only healthy at the beginning of next season, but do I trust him to play 100 games, which is what this team's going to try to do next year? Do I trust that? I don't know that I do. So I think I need Terry Rozier there to be one of the league's best insurance policies. The right answer, and the logical answer, might be get rid of Rozier. You don't need him. You got Kyrie. You got Hayward. You don't need a bench point guard when you could. You don't need him to be your bench point guard when he's better served returning you assets in return. I understand that. You can make that case. But I'm telling you, I don't know that I trust. I'm not ready to say that I trust Kyrie Irving is coming back perfectly healthy and playing 100 games. And then is he going to go and do it for 5 or 6 more years when he wants that deal? He's a free agent after next season. He's going to be a free agent after next season. Do I trust him to stay healthy for that long? Or do I need Terry Rozier there to be on the bench and be ready to assume that role when potentially the Kyrie Irving goes down? If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. Glenn in Moncton sends me like 7 messages. He said, did you perhaps mention the goaltending that Cleveland got away with, or LeBron fouling Rozier that wasn't called, or Tatum and Brown getting fouled constantly without being called? I would agree Rozier shot too many high-risk threes, but the refs carried LeBron to the finals by way of the Eastern Conference Finals. Should have been Celtics and the Pacers winning, but again, no way they're calling goaltending at end of game 6 on LeBron. Look, the LeBron bashing to me is unfounded. And I'm sorry that that's unpopular. Okay? I understand. Look, I'm a bit of a LeBron apologist, okay? My dad's from Akron, Ohio. My grandma's, my whole dad's side lives in Ohio. My whole dad's side is from Akron. They have roots where LeBron is from. So I'm a little protective of LeBron because my family likes him. But I don't love LeBron's antics. I don't love the theatrics. I don't love the social media praise. I don't love the hobnobbing with the officials and the whining about every call. I get that. But for a guy that's as great as he is, who's never been in trouble with the league, who's never been in trouble with the law, you're not going to tell me that that guy's hateable. A guy who donates to charity, a guy who married his high school sweetheart, is a father to his children, has never been in trouble with the law, made it out of a single-parent household, gives back to charity at unbelievable rates. You're not going to tell me that that guy is bad just because you don't like that he gripes at the officials. Tom Brady gripes at the officials. Every wide receiver gripes at the officials. That's part of sports. It's called the superstar treatment, and all the superstars want that treatment. Okay? All of the stars want that treatment. Watching wide receivers to me is unbearable. Have you seen the way that Brandon Cooks last year used to throw up his hand whenever he was touched? My own favorite players do that too. That is irritating, but players do that. I remember meeting an NFL official once, and he told me that quarterbacks are the worst in terms of how they posture for calls, and they all do it. So that's going to fall by my wayside there, that LeBron's unlikable because he gripes at the refs. All right, let's get to those Red Sox lineups. Sox getting ready for the Blue Jays. Red Sox baseball right here, 101.3 ESPN. That's the wrong sport. Marco Estrada against Rick Porcello. Estrada 2-5. The lineup behind him: Curtis Granderson in left, Kevin Pillar in center, Yonervis Solarte at short, Justin Smoke at first, Teoscar Hernandez in right, Russell Martin at third, Kendrys Morales the DH, Devon Travis is at second, and Luke Maley, he is the catcher. Rick Porcello 6-2. Behind him, Andrew Benintendi, Xander Bogaerts at short, Mitch Moreland at first, JD Martinez at DH, Rafael Devers at third, Dustin Pedroia at second, Brock Holt in right, Sandy Leone the catcher, and Jackie Bradley Jr. in center field, playing much better over his last 8 games or so. That'll do it for us. Red Sox baseball coming up next. And remember, tomorrow, Red Sox baseball in the afternoon, and we will come on after as well. This is it for Champlain Valley Game Night. We'll see you at the Burger Bar tonight, only on 101.3 ESPN.